Right now, as you listen to this, your website is probably getting visited.
Oh, absolutely. But the vast majority of your audience doesn't actually have eyes.
Right. They're this invisible swarm of machines.
Yeah.
And everything you think you know about how to talk to them might actually be completely wrong.
Yeah, because when you type in a URL and hit enter, the page shows up like this beautifully designed digital magazine,
Right.
right?
Exactly. But if you sort of lift the floorboards of the internet, you realize human beings are a massive minority.
We really are. The real traffic, the entities that determine if your site even exists on the broader web, are automated crawlers, bots, indexers, all of that.
And those machines, they do not care about your elegant fonts or like your brand's color scheme.
No, not at all. They carry these strict technical rule books, different agendas, and very specific appetites for data.
So today we are doing a really comprehensive, intensive deep dive into how the modern web is actually read, crawled, and indexed by these machines.
Because we need to bypass all that surface-level marketing fluff.
Right. We're looking directly at the rule books. The stack of sources we're pulling from today is heavy. We've got a 2026 technical SEO training syllabus, the official documentation from Google Search Central, and this is the big one, the actual technical crawler manuals from AI giants.
Yeah, OpenAI, Anthropic, Perplexity. We are reading the exact directives that govern these systems.
Which is so critical if you want to maintain any sort of visibility online today.
Yeah.
The mechanics have changed fundamentally just in the last few years.
Completely.
I'm actually going to tease a piece of this right now. Some of the most time-honored tactics you might be using, like setting a priority tag on your sitemap to tell Google what's important, are literally completely ignored now.
It's wild how many people don't know
I
that.
know. And there's also this massive hidden difference between blocking an AI from training on your data versus blocking it from showing up in a search result.
A lot of publishers are just accidentally erasing themselves from the next generation of search because they don't get that distinction.
Well, let's make sure that doesn't happen to you. To understand why, we have to start at the absolute front door of your website.
The robots.txt file.
Yes. If you own a domain, sitting at the very root of it is this plain text file. And people tend to treat this file like it's this impenetrable security wall.
Right, but looking at the actual documentation, it's nothing more than an access control hint.
The hint.
Yeah, it relies entirely on the robot's exclusion protocol, which is essentially just the honor system.
So it's not a firewall at all.
No, not even close. Googlebot or, reputable AI crawlers, they'll read that text file and respect your instructions. But malicious bots or aggressive scrapers, they're just going to read your content anyway.
Okay, so it's a please keep off the grass sign, not an electrified fence.
Exactly. That's the perfect way to look at it.
But even for the bots that do respect the sign, the way they interpret your instructions is incredibly rigid, right?
Oh, very. You give them a list of what they are allowed to see and what they are disallowed from seeing. And the source material actually outlines the precedence rule for when those instructions contradict each other.
Right, and the rule is literally just the longest, most specific path wins.
Based entirely on character count.
Which is so crazy to me.
I mean, if your allow path has 15 characters and your disallow path has 9 characters, the bot follows the allow rule simply because it's a longer string of text.
Okay, let's unpack this. I struggled with the logic of that at first. Why would engineers program a machine to just count characters to resolve a conflict?
It comes down to how web directories are structured. So say you have a broad rule that says disallow the entire images folder. That's a short string of text. But you want to carve out one specific exception like allow images slash public logos.
Oh, I see. That string is naturally longer because it's a deeper, more specific subfolder.
Exactly. If they're exactly the same length, by the way, allow takes precedence over disallow. But by programming the bot to obey the longest string, engineers gave webmasters a mechanical way to create these broad bands with highly specific exceptions.
Without confusing the machine.
Right.
But the machines reading these rules are vastly different today. Looking at these 2026 crawler manuals, the sheer number of new bots knocking on that front door is staggering.
It's an explosion. You have standard Google Dot, obviously, but then you have Google Extended.
And that's the specific crawler for Gemini training.
Yes. And you've got GPT bot for OpenAI training, Claude bot for Anthropic training, Perplexity bot. It's a very crowded landscape.
And this is where webmasters are making critical errors in their robots.txt files. Because, wait, let me pose a specific pushback here.
Go for it.
Say I run a publishing site, and I decide I do not want my articles being scraped to train the next version of ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So I go into my text file and I set a disallow rule for GPT-Bot.
Makes sense.
But won't I just disappear from ChatGPT's search answers? Like, if someone asks a question my site answers perfectly, am I just gone?
According to OpenAI's documentation, no. But only if you manage the bots correctly.
Okay, how so?
Well, OpenAI actually runs two distinct crawlers. GPT-Bot is strictly for their model training data collection, but they run a completely separate bot called OAI SearchBot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that second bot is the one that powers real-time ChatGPT search results, the ones that actually provide links back to your site.
Okay, so it's like running a nightclub with two different bouncers.
I like that.
You have the main door bouncer checking IDs to let people onto the dance floor. That's the search result bot. But you have a totally separate VIP bouncer guarding the back room where they secretly train the AI model.
Right.
If you hand your ban list to the VIP bouncer, the main door bouncer still lets you onto the dance floor.
That analogy perfectly illustrates the mechanics, and Anthropic's documentation outlines the exact same structure. They use ClaudeBot for model training, but Claude's SearchBot for real-time queries.
So you have to be highly granular.
Yes, very. You can block the training scrapers without nuking your visibility in AI-driven search, but you have to explicitly name the right bots in your robots file.
Okay, so robots.txt is how we manage the bouncers. But once a bot gets past the front door, it needs to know where the actual content lives.
Right, it needs a map.
Yeah, and instead of making the machine wander around clicking links blindly, webmasters provide an XML sitemap. For a listener who isn't a developer, why do we use XML instead of just a regular web page with a list of links?
Because an XML file strips away all the visual presentation. There's no styling, no fonts, no layout.
Just pure data.
Exactly. Okay. It is pure structured data hierarchy. It presents your URLs in a format that a machine can parse instantaneously. But the protocol dictates strict physical limits to prevent the bots from being overwhelmed.
Out of the limits.
A single sitemap is capped at 50,000 URLs, and the file size cannot exceed 50 megabytes, uncompressed.
Okay, but if you run a massive e-commerce site with millions of products, 50,000 is nothing.
In that case, you just create a sitemap index file that points to multiple smaller sitemaps. That part is straightforward.
The part of the Google Search Central documentation that absolutely shocked me, though, is how Google treats the metadata inside these sitemaps.
Oh, the priority tags?
Yes. For years, the standard SEO practice was to fill out the priority tag and the change frequency tag, telling the bot, you know, this specific URL is a 1.0 priority and you need to check it every single day.
And the official documentation now explicitly states that Google ignores both of those tags entirely.
Totally ignores them. It feels like an admission that human beings just can't be trusted.
Pretty much.
I mean, if you give a marketing team a priority tag, they're going to label every single page on their website as the utmost priority.
And if every page is a priority, the signal becomes mathematically useless to the machine.
Exactly. So what do they actually listen to?
The bots are looking for verifiable data, not self-reported importance. The only tag they still respect is the last mod tag, the last modification date.
But even then, there's a catch, right?
Yeah, Google cross-checks it. If your sitemap claims a page was updated today, but the bot fetches the page and sees the content hasn't changed in 3 years, Google will eventually just start ignoring your last mod tags as well.
So it's a system built on trust, but constantly verified by data.
Exactly.
Which naturally brings us to the physical limitations of the bots themselves. Google doesn't have infinite computing power. The syllabus talks about this concept of the crawl budget. What is that?
Crawl budget is essentially a formula. It's your crawl capacity multiplied by your crawl demand.
Okay, let's break those down. What's capacity?
Capacity is a hard physical limit dictated by your server. When Googlebot starts requesting pages from your site, it actively monitors how fast your server responds. If your server starts lagging or throwing error codes because it's overwhelmed, Googlebot will throttle its crawl rate to avoid crashing your site.
Right, it doesn't want to accidentally DDoS you, so that's capacity. What dictates the demand side?
Demand is algorithmic. It's how much Google actually desires your content.
And how do they measure desire?
Well, that fluctuates based on the popularity of your site, the perceived value of your links, and how stale your content is becoming in their index. But here's the kicker. Even if you have massive demand and a highly capable server, there is a hard ceiling on individual pages. Googlebot enforces a strict 2 megabyte fetch limit per HTML URL.
2 megabytes. So it reads the first 2 megabytes of your underlying code, and anything past that is just silently discarded.
Yep, silently dropped.
I want to spend a second on why that limit exists. Because if Google is indexing trillions of web pages. The computational cost of rendering the DOM, the document object model, is astronomical. They simply cannot afford to let a bot endlessly download bloated code.
No, they can't. And to put that in perspective, 2 megabytes of raw HTML is massive. Most well-coded text articles are a fraction of that. You usually only hit that limit if you are embedding massive amounts of inline CSS or raw data directly into the HTML file, rather than linking out to external style sheets.
But wait, if they don't want bloated files, shouldn't you just use that robots.txt file to block Googlebot from crawling your CSS and JavaScript entirely? Just let it read the text.
Oh no, according to the syllabus, that is a catastrophic mistake.
Really? Why?
Because Googlebot doesn't just read text anymore. It actually renders the page visually to understand the layout. It does this using a headless Chromium browser.
Meaning it's essentially running a background version of Chrome, just without a physical monitor or user interface attached.
Right. And to render that page, it absolutely needs the CSS and JavaScript. Think of your HTML content as the food at an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Okay, I love a good buffet.
Right, so you only have 20 minutes to eat, and your plate can only hold 2 megabytes of food. The CSS and JavaScript are the utensils. If you block the utensils, the bot can't properly digest the food.
Oh, I see.
It won't understand what is a primary headline, what is a hidden drop-down menu, or what text is obscured by a pop-up.
That makes perfect sense. So if I have a 500,000-page e-commerce site, how do I even know if I'm running out of budget? Like, if my pages are starving for attention, I can't physically watch the bot at this buffet.
No, but the sources point to 3 specific telltale signs. The first one is found in Google Search Console. You'll see a category labeled Discovered Currently Not Indexed, and the number of URLs in that category will just continuously climb.
Meaning what, exactly?
That status means Google saw the link, they know the page exists, but their crawler literally ran out of budget before it could fetch it.
So they just put it on a to-do list and they never get around to it.
Exactly. The second symptom is severe time delays. So if you publish a new, highly relevant product page, it's in your XML sitemap, but it takes 7+ days to even appear in search results. You have a demand issue.
And what's the third symptom? I imagine it has to do with looking at the actual raw server logs.
Yes, log file analysis. If you filter your server logs specifically for Googlebot's IP addresses, you might find it wasting its limited daily budget on zero-value pages. For an e-commerce site, this often looks like the bot repeatedly crawling your cart URLs, your customer login pages, or just endlessly clicking through different search filter parameters.
Okay, let's focus on those filter parameters because that introduces a massive problem. Say you have a shoe category page. Then the user filters by size 10.
Mm-hmm.
Then they filter by color red. From a human perspective, we are just looking at a refined list of shoes.
Right.
But from the machine's perspective, the server just generated 3 entirely unique URLs that all display basically identical content.
Yes. This is known as the deduplication dilemma. If you allow the bot to index all those variations, you dilute your site's authority and you just burn through your crawl budget.
So how do we fix it?
Well, webmasters rely on 2 primary directives to solve this. The NOINX tag and the canonical tag, but they operate on entirely different mechanical principles.
Let's break down the mechanics then. If I use a NOINX tag, I am putting a line of code on the page that explicitly tells the search engine, drop this page from your database entirely. But there is a massive catch to that, right?
There is. The catch is that for the machine to obey the NOINX tag, it must be able to crawl the page first.
Right.
If you panic about your crawl budget and block those filtered URL parameters in your robots.txt file, the bot is forbidden from entering the page, which means it never sees the NOINX tag.
If it can't get in the room, it can't read the instructions on the whiteboard.
Exactly.
And if external sites happen to link to that blocked URL, Google might just index it anyway, based on the external signals, right?
Yeah.
Like showing it in search results as a blank blue link without a description.
Which is a terrible user experience. That's the risk of NOINX. The alternative is the canonical tag. A canonical tag is a strong hint that says, I acknowledge this page exists, but it's just a duplicate. Please pass all the credit and authority for this page to a different master URL.
So NOINX is a kill switch. Canonical is a redirect of authority. Which brings us to the absolute cardinal sin of technical SEO.
Oh, yes.
The training syllabus puts a giant red warning label on this. Never, ever place a NOINX tag and a canonical tag on the exact same page. Why does that break the machine?
Because you're creating a pure logical paradox. You are simultaneously telling the bot, this page is completely worthless, destroy it, while also telling the bot, This page is highly valuable, and it is perfectly equivalent to my master URL.
You can't be both.
You really can't. Google's documentation states that when presented with contradictory signals like this, the bot will simply ignore your instructions entirely and attempt to guess what you meant.
And you never want the bot to just guess.
Never.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If you're listening and you run a blog, you've probably faced a real-world scenario of this. The syllabus presents this specific matrix. Let's say I have a main article page, but I also automatically generate a print-friendly version of that article at a separate URL.
Very common.
Right. And because the print version is clean and easy to read, other websites occasionally link directly to the print URL. I don't want two versions of the article competing in search. So what's the right move? Do I use Noindex or Canonical on the print page?
Well, let's walk through it. If you use Noindex, you accomplish the goal of keeping the print page out of the search results. But think about the mechanics of link equity. Those external sites linking to the print version are passing valuable authority to your domain.
Yeah.
If you Noindex the page, you are telling Google the page doesn't exist. All of that incoming link equity vanishes. It is literally thrown in the trash.
Wow. But if I use a canonical tag on the print page, pointing an arrow back to my main article, I solve both problems.
Exactly. The print page stays out of the search index because Google treats it as a duplicate, but the system safely funnels all of that incoming link authority back to your main article.
You consolidate your power.
That is the essence of technical site architecture right there.
So we've curated the front door, we've optimized the bot's diet so it doesn't waste its budget, and we've solved the duplicate content paradox. How do we measure if any of this is actually working?
According to the documentation, we monitor the Google Search Console page indexing report. This report categorizes every single URL the bot has discovered into statuses like error, valid with warnings, valid, and excluded.
And the single biggest mistake site owners make is misinterpreting that excluded category, right?
Without a doubt.
Because think about the panic response. Say I log into my analytics on a Monday. I see a chart showing 3,000 URLs marked as excluded and only 200 URLs marked as error. Human nature dictates I attack the 3,000 because it's the bigger number. Why is that the wrong move?
Because you have to read how the documentation actually defines the word excluded. It does not mean failed. It means the page is not in the index for an expected intentional reason.
Like the print-friendly page we just successfully canonicalized.
Precisely. If you correctly canonicalize thousands of filter parameters, or if you intentionally block low-value pages, they populate the excluded list. A massive excluded count is often proof that your deduplication strategy is working perfectly. Treating those as failures just wastes hours of engineering time.
Meanwhile, those 200 error pages are actual bleeding wounds.
Right. Error status means the bot tried to index the page but encountered a mechanical failure. These are often 5x server errors, which means Googlebot requested the page and your server essentially crashed or timed out before responding. Or they are soft 404s.
Okay, for the non-technical listener, what is a soft 404?
A standard 404 error is your server telling the bot this page does not exist. A soft 404 is a lie.
A lie.
Yeah. Your server tells the bot, success, here is the page. But when the bot actually renders the HTML, the page is completely empty, or maybe it just says product out of stock. The bot flags it as an error because the server header contradicts the visual reality of the page. You must prioritize fixing errors over investigating exclusions.
So getting the page successfully indexed without errors is really just the baseline, though. The documentation emphasizes that once the machine understands your content, it heavily scrutinizes how a human experiences it. And this brings us to the 2026 Core Web Vitals. The metrics are LCP, INP, and CLS.
Right. Getting crawled is the entry fee. Core Web Vitals are the performance review. LCP is largest contentful paint. It's a strict measurement of loading performance. How long does it take for the single largest image or text block to fully render? To pass, it must be under 2.5 seconds.
Okay. And IMP is interaction to next paint.
This measures the latency of responsiveness. So when a user clicks a button to open a menu or adds an item to a cart, how many milliseconds pass before the browser visually updates to acknowledge that click? The failure threshold here is anything over 200 milliseconds.
Wow, that is incredibly fast. And finally, CLS, cumulative layout shift. This is the one that drives me absolutely insane as a user.
We all experience it. You load an article on your phone, you start reading the first paragraph, and suddenly a massive advertisement or a slow-loading image renders at the top of the screen.
Oh, I hate that.
Right, because the website code didn't reserve physical space for that image. Everything on the screen aggressively, violently shifts downward, causing you to lose your place or click the wrong link.
It's the worst. Mechanically, how do you fix that layout shift?
By declaring the width and height dimensions of your images and add slots in your CSS before they even load, that tells the browser to draw an empty placeholder box, so when the image finally arrives, the surrounding text doesn't have to move.
And the machines penalize you if you don't do this.
Severely. And if your CLS score is over 0.1, your perfectly crawled, expertly canonicalized page will be demoted because it provides a fundamentally broken user experience.
So what does this all mean? If we zoom out from the character counts in a text file and the millisecond measurements of layout shifts, what is the overarching narrative of these manuals?
The overarching narrative is that managing a website is no longer just a dialogue with the single search engine. You're orchestrating a highly complex negotiation with a multitude of different machine intelligences.
You have to know the rules for everyone.
Yeah. You have to understand the specific mechanical limits of how a crawler values your architecture, how an AI training bot ingests your raw data, and how a real-time search bot surfaces your answers.
And looking at the trajectory of bots like OpenAI's and Anthropic's, it forces a really profound question about where the internet is heading. These bots are increasingly scraping the web not just to serve up a traditional page of blue links that send traffic back to your site, right?
Yeah.
They're doing it to absorb the information and answer the user's question directly inside their own chat interface.
Right. And as that behavior scales, the whole concept of optimizing a website will likely undergo a fundamental shift.
I mean, think about it. If the vast majority of human users stop clicking links and just read AI summaries, does human-readable web design become obsolete? Like, in the near future, will the primary focus of site architecture abandon beautiful layouts and CSS entirely just to ensure a domain functions as a perfectly structured, machine-readable data feed for the AI hive mind?
It's a huge question. It suggests a reality where the underlying database is the only thing that actually matters, and the visual website as we know it becomes entirely secondary. It's a completely different paradigm for how knowledge is distributed.
The invisible city isn't just visiting the library anymore. They are taking over the architecture. Something to think about the next time you hit publish.